Welcome to episode 324 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Me too.
I can't believe it's the middle of April already.
It is. You know what today is?
It is that horrible, horrible day. Tax day.
And do you want to tell people what I was doing 15 minutes ago?
Actually filing your taxes on time.
Well, finishing my taxes so that after the show I can file them.
Right. Amazing. It only happens once every decade or so.
Right. First time I have not filed for an extension in, about a decade.
All right. So we've got a bunch of listener feedback and a fair amount of news this week. So let's jump into it. But if you'd like to leave us some feedback for next week, you can email us for sure at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. I say for sure to the email because our voicemail number may be broken. So we'll look into that and get back to you guys on that one next week.
All right. Well, we have a couple things here to go through. So I'll read the first two here. The first one is from Eric, and we're going to actually talk about this a little bit later. Eric says, "You're correct that the Star Wars titles are Disney titles with one exception. Since Lucasfilm did not actually own Episode 4, A New Hope, Disney did not get it in their acquisition. That one is owned by 20th Century Fox, so it is an Ultraviolet title. Secondly, HBO is actually available as of last night on Sling TV for an additional $15. That's a really cool thing, too. But as I understand it, the implementation is pretty different. It actually has live capabilities. It does not have recording capabilities. And it does have a back catalog, but I don't think it's every episode. And I think it's not as easy to discover stuff on it, listening to other tech people talk about it. So interesting thing there. And we will definitely talk more about the Star Wars thing because, man, I went on a rant and a tear about that this past weekend. So the next feedback item we have is from Lance. And he says, "A while back, you mentioned that update KB2984972. You remember that, Josh, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. I have all of these KB numbers memorized. All of them.
Well, this is actually a remote desktop connection capability. It's an update for RDC 7.1, and it handled how logins were restricted or something.
Right. We actually talked about this on the show because this is the one that broke the concurrent remote desktop session stuff that we've always advocated for setting up so that you can manage your home theater PCs from different machines without interrupting the current session.
Exactly. And guess what? He says that this update, we mentioned that the update broke the ability to RDP into a computer multiple times at once. And we had mentioned that if it's removed, it'll start working again. He says, "Unfortunately, I can't remove it. It fails. Note that I can't add new updates either. It appears nothing I do will remove this update or complete new updates. I've tried the standard recommendations via help and basic attempts to repair, like rolling back to a previous backup. Unfortunately, it appears I need to roll back to early 2014 to get back to the time that I think the updates were working properly. I'd prefer not to do that if possible." Gee, I wonder why. "Do you have any ideas?" Wow. This is nasty.
You know, our listeners have gotten really, really good at finding the most obscure issues. I've never heard of anything like this happening before.
Yeah. You know, I had a box. I think it was one of my servers that I was running Windows 7 on that refused to get updates again. And I don't know what help he's tried to follow, but one of the things that I did find is that there were some Visual Basic runtime updates that were attempting to install every time I tried to do any sort of install or back out or anything like that. And that always prevented everything else from running. And ultimately, I had to just hide those, pretend, you know, like not do them to get past them and let everything else work. I have no idea what I did to fix it. There were some things that helped me resolve those specific issues. That might be something to look into, but that's really all I have at this point.
I just had two ideas. First idea, make sure you're looking in the event viewer to see if you've got a more detailed error message in there that might explain what's going on, and at the very least, give you something else to Google. It's just go to the computer management section. That's where you're going to find the event viewer, and look under system and application, and just look through all of the different event logs and look for the big red icons that say that mean error, and look through those. The other thing that just occurred to me is I think Windows Update has issues if your system time is way off. So check your clock. Like, maybe it's not getting updates if your system time is horribly wrong. I know that the system time being wrong can have all sorts of strange consequences. So that would be another thing to check, especially if it's Windows 7, because Windows 7 is awful at trying to keep the time accurately.
Yeah. Why is that?
Who knows?
Why is it that my TiVo can start and stop the show exactly at the moment the show starts and the moment the show ends, but Media Center via Windows cannot keep proper time? I don't understand.
Well, Media Center can, as long as you do your own effort to keep the Windows time correct.
Which is ridiculous.
Right. It's like, if only Windows had a service for keeping the time. Oh, wait, it does, and it still doesn't work correctly. Real quick side tangent on that. You can set up your own task and schedule it for like daily to manually update the time and just completely automate this whole process. It's not very difficult. That's what I recommend you do on your home theater PCs.
I think we have a post about that out on the site.
We probably do. And since I've rebuilt my PC, I have not done that. I should probably go back and do that. All right. So that's it from Lance. We've also got a rather large email from Mike Fauché, frequent writer to the show and also guest a few times on the show, I think. And he wrote in to respond to some previous listener questions. Now, there's a lot here, so I'm going to summarize some of this. First off, was the listener who had all of the stuttering issues, as I stutter through his stuttering issues, after changing to a different NVIDIA video card. And it was a high-performance gaming card. And we wondered if maybe his issues were caused by a bad NIC, because he was also using network-based TV tuners. Mike Fauché doesn't think that's it at all. He said, even if it's Realtek, Mike Fauché has used Realtek NICs without issues in a bunch of his builds. Mike says, I believe the bulk of his issues is more related to refresh rate and screen scaling along with the drivers, both the chipset and the video driver. When he changed out the video card, it added some additional variables that could be responsible for the severe stuttering. It's most likely in the card slash motherboard slash driver combination than the NIC. So that's where to go with that. You know, make sure that all of those drivers, including the motherboard situation, are all up to date. And I didn't think about the scaling issues, but the scaling and refresh rate things are important issues that Mike brought up there. We've seen weird things happen when those scaling and refresh rate settings get set incorrectly, especially on Intel chipsets, especially. But
yep, I've had that problem.
Yep. All right. He also wanted to respond to the listener who's having issues with HDMI handshake issues and sleep and wake and all this stuff. So I'm just going to read this whole section. He says, waking and not getting the handshaking. This is a compound issue that involves both devices, the TV and the PC. And there are only a few things he can do. He can add the Geffen HDMI Detective? Wow, I'm blanking on the name of that. I think it's what it's called. We mentioned it last time. Or he can get a new video card to change or alter the compatibility between the devices. Or, as we sort of jokingly but not entirely recommended, just leave the PC on 24/7. Mike says, I've seen this before, and typically the best option, assuming the PC was built with power conservation in mind, is to leave the PC on and disable all screen blanking, screen saver, and low power settings. It will solve several of the issues he's brought up. The problem is especially noticeable if he's using hibernation and not sleep. Yeah, you definitely don't want hibernation on your home theater PC. In addition, I would make sure the new system has all current chipset drivers, not just video drivers, as sleep interacts with the entire system. If he chooses the option to leave it on, I would try to use the native Intel graphics, as that will save on the power requirements. The last issue that Mike wanted to respond to was the problems with surround sound on Blu-ray. He says this is most likely caused by the fact that he's running a multi-channel soundtrack through the TV. Most TVs do not downmix high-def soundtracks into a two-channel source correctly or at all.
Yeah, this is pretty much what I was expecting there.
Yeah. He says Dolby DTS, for example, will choke in all but a few TVs if they are used for downmixing into a stereo soundtrack. The way he has it hooked is not ideal, and he should consider altering his hookup and letting the receiver do the downmixing, or in some cases, the Blu-ray player has an option to downmix in the player before sending it to the TV. So all of those sound like pretty good suggestions from good friend Mike Fauché. So thanks, Mike, for passing along your words of wisdom to the other listeners.
All right. Well, how's your voice? You want me to pick up the next one?
Oh, I can do this one, I guess. This one is from Brian. He says, hey, guys, I've recently been having issues with no video output from my Windows 7 Media Center. I've updated the NVIDIA drivers and recently replaced the video card since it started happening more frequently. In this process, I have a new problem. After the PC reboots, Windows Media Center resets itself to the 480i resolution. I keep changing it back to 1080i, and it saves if I close and open the program, but each reboot sets it back to 480i. I have it rebooting nightly for general stability, so I'm having to redo the configure your TV or monitor steps every day. My desktop resolution is set to 1080. I'm using component out and have tried the various Windows Media Center display settings like monitor, flat panel, etc. Online forums suggest a program called Media Control causing such a problem, but I don't have that installed. Do you have any suggestions? That's another really weird one that I've never heard of before. I've never once experienced Media Center forgetting what my display type is or just defaulting to some horribly wrong option like this.
Well, the one thing that I would wonder is what is his PC set to? Like, does he have his Media Center set to the same resolution as his Windows configuration is set so that the TV isn't having to switch resolutions as he goes in and out of Media Center? Because sometimes that can cause problems. So I would check that.
Well, he says that his desktop resolution is set to 1080 and he's been setting Media Center to 1080. So it sounds like they're set the same.
Well, maybe. He says he's changing it to 1080i. And if there's a 1080i that's very specifically identified in Media Center and it's just 1080 by 1920 is the desktop resolution, which isn't necessarily 1080i.
Right.
That would be a switch. So I would look into trying to make them the same to see if that helps at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he's doing 1080i because of the type of TV he's got this plugged into. He is using component video after all.
Yeah, but can't you do 1080p on component video?
You can, unless the TV that he's got doesn't support 1080p.
Okay.
Maybe it's a weird 1080i only TV.
Yeah, that is kind of strange. I don't know.
Another option I suppose he could try is, I know it's less optimal, obviously, but try setting everything to 720p. And I remember way back in the day that there were some TVs that would do 1080i but 720p and only, you know, and not do 1080p. So maybe try setting it all to 720p and see if that maybe fixes the problems. But I don't know. That's really weird.
Yes, I agree. It is really weird.
All right. Well, that's it for our listener feedback this week. So let's jump into some news. Biggest news of the week. We've been saying for months that we've been jealous of all of our listeners in Europe, and more recently in Australia, because they can hook a TV tuner straight up to their Xbox One, and we can't. We're in the country the Xbox was created in, and we can't do this. Microsoft always doing all the cool things for people not in the US. Yeah, that's not actually accurate.
Usually the case.
But in this case, it was. Well, Microsoft has somewhat rectified the situation. Somewhat. They've done it rather unusually. So in Europe and Australia, Microsoft made their own digital over-the-air tuner. Their own. Microsoft branded USB. You plug it into the back of your Xbox One, plug an antenna into it, bam, you've got over-the-air TV. They're now bringing this feature to us Americans and our listeners in Canada, which is cool. But the weird thing is they didn't make their own tuner this time. Instead, they've partnered with Hopog, which, by the way, it's funny trying to listen to regular tech news people try to pronounce Hopog because they haven't been, you know, talking about Hopog devices for the last 10 years.
I was going to say, in all fairness, it took us a couple years to get it right.
Sure, but that was still like 5 years ago that we got it right. So, yeah, they've partnered with Hopog. It's just one specific tuner from the company. It's also USB. It's the WinTV HVR 955Q. And, of course, as soon as this thing got, as soon as this feature got announced, the prices on that tuner shot up on Amazon. I don't know if you noticed that. I checked right when I saw the story, and this tuner is like $60 on Amazon. Now it's $85.
Supply and demand.
Yeah. So you buy this specific Hopog tuner, you plug it in your Xbox One, and as long as you're in the Xbox preview program, you get live TV over the air using the One Guide and all of the features we've been talking about in the past. That includes a live TV buffer so that it'll buffer up to a half hour of TV if you pause and walk away to go make popcorn or something like that. So it reserves 4 gigs of storage on your hard drive for that buffer. But other than that, no DVR functionality or anything like that, just your standard One Guide functionality. So I'm excited about this, to see this in the US. I obviously want the DVR functionality, and frankly, I would rather have the Microsoft branded tuner because it was cheaper. I want to say it was like $40 in those other countries, or the equivalent of $40-ish in those other countries, as opposed to paying $85 for this, because it's one tuner. You know, one over-the-air tuner for $85 is not a great deal.
Yeah, per tuner, that's pretty high. The thing that kind of surprised me on this was that it was, well, Hopog. I mean, I didn't expect it to be them. We talk about Silicon Dust and Seton all the time because they're kind of the names that we think of when we think of tuners. Hopog seems kind of like a throwback almost. And I'm wondering if they did make it open to a third party, if that means there's an opportunity for maybe a Seton device to be compatible down the line.
Well, that sure would be nice, but would obviously require a lot more effort on Microsoft's part to handle all of the copy protection and all of that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. And the big difference, of course, being that the Hopog tuner is over the air, and while some HD home run tuners are over the air, most of the Seton and HD home run tuners are actually cable card, and I don't know that they're talking cable card yet. Now, Josh, you and I were talking the other day about something that I find particularly interesting here. I recall some news about a conversation with Major Nelson and maybe someone from Microsoft, and a question being asked about, well, is this a first step to something bigger? Are we going to see better capabilities with media or something along those lines? And the implication was that maybe we might actually see DVR capabilities coming in the Xbox One.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't anything even remotely approaching a concrete answer on that topic, but
true,
it sure did sound like that was at least something they were investigating, and hopefully that means we'll see that soon. I'm serious if If Microsoft can bring us full cable card support, DVR functionality on the Xbox One, that will be the thing that gets me to leave Media Center.
I still need easy access to media libraries in the home. DLNA has not gotten it.
I got Plex.
Oh.
It doesn't solve my music issue, but the music, Xbox Music OneDrive integration kind of solves that already for me. So that might be all I need.
Yeah, possibly.
All right. So that's the big news there for that. But I did see one other interesting thing here. There's a Twitter account that I follow called The Xbox Beat, and this guy had set up the HobHog tuner on his Xbox One and was trying some things out. And he tweeted something that I hadn't really considered, and that was, if you're using a USB tuner attached to your One Guide, what happens if you plug in something else to your HDMI input, like an Xbox 360 or something like that? And so he did that. And what it does is makes whatever is on that HDMI input a channel in the One Guide. So you can still do HDMI pass-through even if you're using the over-the-air tuner, which is cool. You know, if you're doing something other than TV through the HDMI input, then you can still do that and have the best of both worlds.
That is kind of cool. It's a little bit kludgy because you'd have to know that you need to go to the HDMI channel. I think he said it was channel one or something like that, but it's cool that you can do it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you would have to say like Xbox Watch channel one or something like that instead of just saying Xbox Watch TV or whatever those commands are. Xbox Go to TV, I think it is. But yeah, so that's assuming you got the Kinect, which I kind of always just assume that because I have one and I use it all the freaking time. So I love my voice commands.
I use my Kinect every time that I wave at the Xbox to remind it that it should recognize me.
Yeah, it's still not the greatest at that. All right, so let's, we're already talking Xbox, so let's move on to some gaming news this week. We saw an update through the Xbox 360 preview program that I had questioned its usage and importance and relevance, given that the Xbox 360 is so old at this point. But they released a new update that is somewhat important, and that is that the Xbox 360 now supports much larger external storage devices.
Now, it says that it's up to 2 terabytes, which frankly surprises me that that's the limit. Like, you can buy 6 terabyte drives now. Why would they have a 2 terabyte limit?
I'm guessing it has something to do with dealing with different hard drive format types and stuff like that. That's the only reason I could think of.
Yeah, I guess so. So this is in the latest preview program update. People will be seeing this again for the 360 specifically. Now, we link to an Engadget post that has a most sensational headline for this update, and they say that this makes the 360 an amazing media center. And I guess you could look at it that way, that you could have a whole bunch of local storage and run it from there. But do you think that's what people are going to do, or this is just going to be a massive storage for all the downloadable games that people can buy now?
My first thought definitely was not throwing your whole movie collection on an external hard drive plugged into your 360. I suppose some people do that, but I have to assume that most people are looking at this thinking, yay, I can finally get most, if not all, of my Xbox 360 games on one drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that's cool news for 360 users. On the Xbox One side, the Microsoft has taken some heat over the last couple of weeks about the Xbox One's power consumption numbers. Now, this didn't really feel like new news when this was announced, but some studies came out saying if you use the Xbox One's instant on features, then it uses a lot more power. Well, we we knew that already. Like, that's not really news. As soon as the Xbox One came out, people were hooking up kilowatts and things like that to find out how much power they used in standby if you had the instant on features turned on. And we knew it was pretty high.
Right.
But there was a study done by an energy conservation organization, all the stuff, and it showed that Xbox Ones in standby mode are costing the universe quadrillions of dollars and all this craziness. And you know, I saw those articles and I thought, really? Because I got my Xbox One on launch day and it's been set to instant on from the moment I got it. And I've noticed absolutely no change in my electric bill. No change at all. In fact, recently my electric bill went down. So this didn't seem like it could really be that big of a difference. So, but it was enough bad press, I guess, that Microsoft went in and they're making some changes to the initial Xbox One setup, and that it now allows you to opt out of the instant on functions. Now, you could always eventually disable it, but I think it was on by default. And now in the setup, you can say, no, I really don't want that. Now, that's definitely going to save you some energy, and by saving you energy, it's also going to save you some money. They estimate $6 to $15 per year, not per month, per year of energy savings if you live in the US. But there are a couple of downsides to not having instant on enabled. The biggest one is it's not going to do background updates. You're going to go back to the world of doing updates on your Xbox 360, and that is you turn it on and it says, hey, sorry to ruin your day, but we've got a 4 gig download for you. So hang on for the next 2 hours while we download and install this update, and then come back. And if you're still around, then you can play a game.
If only it were that honest.
Right. But that's basically what it means. And I think that means that if you have a Kinect, you also can't say Xbox on to turn it on.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that may be a bigger deal for more people, actually.
Well,
because that's something that happens in many homes every day.
But both of them would be catastrophic in my household, because everyone in my household uses voice to turn on the TV now, and all TV functionality goes through the Xbox One at my house now. So you always have to turn it on. And okay, they could go back to using, you know, the one button on the Xbox remote to turn it on. That probably wouldn't be the biggest deal in the world. But if every once in a while, when they hit that button, they had to wait 45 minutes for an update to finish, that'd be a non-starter. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So I'll just take the $6 to $15 per year energy bill hit, I guess.
And unplug some other chargers around the house to compensate.
Sure. And so the other thing about this report was they were talking about how the Xbox One and the PS4, by the way, both use way more power than the previous generation consoles. But that's only true when they're comparing them to the most recent iterations of the previous generation consoles. So yes, the Xbox One does use a lot more power than the Xbox 360 that was released in 2013.
Because it's far more efficient than the original Xbox 360 was.
Right, but it doesn't use more power than the original Xbox 360. The original Xbox 360 in 2007 used more power than the Xbox One.
Right.
And the same is true for the PlayStation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The 360s have become more efficient as they've evolved over time. So they use less power, and that it's an unfair comparison to today's 360 to the Xbox One.
Right. And Microsoft is doing the same sorts of things with the Xbox One. They say that it already uses less power than it did when it first launched. And as this generation progresses, we're just going to see the same sort of efficiencies built into the new consoles. But one last thing that I wanted to point out on this. Yes, the Xbox One in standby uses way more power than the PS4. But in every other usage, like when you're actually using the Xbox One, it uses less power than the PS4. So there you go. Go green. Cool. Get an Xbox. Maybe not.
Tree hugging or tree kicking? I don't know.
All right. So on to our next Xbox story. And that is, well, it seems like every week we have to talk about preview updates to the dashboard, right? So we just got another preview update to the Xbox One. If you're in the preview program, this release is basically just bug fixes, but Microsoft is saying that later this month, they're going to be releasing another update and there's going to be new features there. But if you look closely and you dive into the settings, go into settings and then preferences, and in that middle column underneath system and app settings, there's a new checkbox and it's labeled allow game streaming to other devices, beta.
Woohoo!
Yeah, this is what I've really been waiting for. Unfortunately, it doesn't do anything yet. You can check it all you want, but you still can't stream any games right now. This does require Windows 10, the Xbox app on the Windows 10. I grabbed my Surface Pro that has Windows 10 on it, fired up the Xbox app. There was no way for me to stream games right now. So I'm assuming they're going to be releasing an update to the Xbox app on Windows 10 sometime within the next couple of weeks would be my guess, and maybe another set of enhancements in that next preview update to the Xbox One later in the month. And maybe by May, we'll be able to do this in beta as long as you're on the preview program. And I'm really excited to try that out. I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, that sounds very cool. We knew that that was coming, and I think that's something we've been looking forward to.
All right, so one more gaming story, and this one isn't Xbox, but I wanted to point this one out. If you're a PC gamer, you probably know about the Humble Bundle. And if not, you should, because it's a great way to save a bunch of money on games. The idea behind Humble Bundle is every couple of weeks, they release a bundle of games. It's usually anywhere from like 4 to 10 games. And the idea is you pay what you want. You literally pay whatever you want. I mean, it has to be some amount of money, but you know, it shows you the average that people are paying. And usually if you pay more than the average, it unlocks more games that you get, but it's usually ridiculously cheap. Like usually you can get all of the games in the bundle for like $7. And we're talking about AAA games a lot of times, not always brand new, but typically there's at least a couple of really good games in these bundles. Now, the other thing that makes the Humble Bundle really cool is how the money is used. So you pay for the bundle and then you get to choose where the money goes. And it's typically split up between a little bit of money for Humble Bundle and a little bit of money for the game developers. And then also typically a charity. And then you get to choose how much goes to each of those three buckets. So you're always helping out people and sending the money exactly where you want and getting a great deal on games. Or maybe not. I suppose you could pay $5,000 if you wanted, but I doubt very many people do that. So anyway, the reason I wanted to point it out this month is there's a couple of really cool things going on with this specific bundle. It is the Humble Origin Bundle 2, Origin being EA's gaming service. And so that means a bunch of EA games that you've probably heard of if you're a gamer, including Dragon Age 2, Dragon Age Origins, Mass Effect 2, Dead Space 2, Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare, Peggle. And that's not even all of them. There's more games in this bundle. Again, you pay whatever you want. You could pay $5 and get most of these. But the really cool thing here is the charities that they're bundled with here, and EA isn't taking any money. So you're only choosing how to distribute the money between Humble Bundle and the charities. And the charities are also of particular interest, at least to me, because the first charity on the list is called Girls Who Code. And it's a charity that's all about getting more women into computer science programs to get more women into the computer programming field, and it's been really successful in the 2 or 3 years that it's been around. So that's a really cool charity. There's another one called the V Foundation that's a foundation around fighting cancer, and then another really cool one called Build On, which is working to end poverty and illiteracy. So really cool opportunity to get some really good games for a really great price and helping out some awesome charities. So check that out at humblebundle.com. It's available for the next, and by the time you're hearing this, you're probably going to have only another week left or so. So head on over there and pick that up if you're a PC gamer.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Small amount of mobile news this week. Microsoft announced another phone. Is it a flagship? No, of course it's not a flagship. It's another low-end Windows phone that we're not really going to care about. So we're not going to spend much time on it. It is the Lumia 540 Dual SIM. Tell me if this sounds familiar. It's 5-inch, 720p display, Snapdragon 200 processor, a gig of RAM, 8 gigs of storage. Okay. I mean, that's bottom of the barrel in terms of processor, but at least a usable amount of RAM. And the cameras are okay also. It's got an 8-megapixel camera on the back, a 5-megapixel camera on the front, recognizing that people love taking selfies.
That's actually pretty good in the front.
That's really good on the front, yeah.
Yeah.
And this phone's going to be about $150 retail, no contract. Of course, a phone like this not coming to the U.S. because it's not the kind of phone that sells well in the U.S. So it's going to be available in, you know, EMEA and APAC, so like Middle East, Africa, Asia, Pacific areas, and Italy for some reason. I don't know why Italy. And available in early May. So if you're in any of those regions and looking for a cheap but usable Windows phone, then, you know, you only had about 47 other options, but now you've got the Lumia 540 dual SIM offering also.
You know, I'm actually more intrigued by the new Blue HD that came out. Did you see Paul Thurrott's review of that?
Yeah. Is the only thing that's different between the new Blue Win HD and the old Blue Win HD that this one has LTE?
I think it's that it's LTE and this one doesn't, somewhat ironically, come in blue.
Right. Blue is the name of the company.
It is available in like a gray black, which is nice because I don't think they had a decent non-flashy color before. And I've actually looked at these phones at the Windows Store. They're really nice. And they have a nice screen. It's a 720 screen. It's 2 on the front, 8 on the back. So it's not as good as far as the cameras are concerned. $200 without a contract available in the U.S. kind of today. I think this is a better device if you're looking for something of this caliber.
Yeah. You know, frankly, when I was suffering with the issues with my 1020, I considered one of those Blue Win HD phones because they're bigger but still have some interesting specs. So yeah, that's a cool pick too.
Of course you did, because they come in yellow.
And yes, they're available in yellow. That's absolutely correct.
All right. So a couple things going on in the industry. I had mentioned that we'll talk again about the Star Wars stuff. So is that something that you ended up talking about in last week's show while I was away?
We talked about the release, and you know, I did mention that like how you could get some of them and whether or not they would be on Vudu, hopefully. But when I talked about it last week, they weren't actually out yet. So some of that stuff was still speculation.
And I don't think we could have speculated for what a mess it would be. So they became available on Friday of last week. And I was interested. I wanted to find out how this was going to work because I heard about the licensing issue for the first film. And I went out to
Hold on. The first film being Episode 4, just so that we're clear.
Right. Chronologically in our universe, Star Wars, without a subtitle and without a number, but within the introductions, a chapter number. And it was surprising to see that on the Disney site, sure enough, it said this movie is unavailable. You can't buy it from Disney. You can't even buy it from them. Like they couldn't come up with some arrangement that would allow you to buy it from them. So what this means is that if you typically buy your movies from Disney, that you wouldn't be able to buy this one. Now, why would people buy their movies from Disney? Well, because they automatically sync across a bunch of services. Like, they sync to your Apple TV, and they sync to Vudu, and they sync to Google Play, except for this one. So you could buy the whole set of six movies, but this one won't be available on the other platforms. All right, so let's buy it from Apple then. You can get all six, but that fourth episode, yep, that's not showing up anywhere but on your Apple devices. It won't sync to any other platform. You could go to other stores. In fact, your best bet is probably to go to Vudu. Because what Vudu's done, even though it's very poorly advertised, is they have all six movies, and the fourth movie is, in fact, an Ultraviolet title. It says so on the little pop-up card, but it doesn't say so in the details for the movie, even though most Ultraviolet movies do indicate clearly that they're Ultraviolet. This is the only one that's Ultraviolet. None of the other ones are. So if you buy all six, this one will appear on most, not all, most of your Ultraviolet partners, and the other five will appear on your Disney partners. Confused yet? All right, let's talk about the ones where you can't see this. If you go to Cinema Now, which is an Ultraviolet partner, you can't buy this movie. You can't watch this movie, even if you bought the Ultraviolet version somewhere else. It's not available. What? What a mess. I mean, what were they thinking? This is just, to me, this is the poster child of all the digital rights mess that consumers are having to deal with. And this is probably like the premier pop culture set of movies that everybody is going to own or already owns and may or may not get the digital versions. And this is how they roll it out. What were they thinking? This is crazy. And honestly, I get the different companies own the rights to it, but Disney and Fox should have figured out how to make this work in advance. Disney should have thrown money at a solution to just make it seamless for consumers.
And there's going to be a lot of people who would only buy one movie instead of all six. And if they were going to buy only one, it would be Episode 4. The one that they screwed up the most with the digital rights management.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. What a mess. So if you want to hear me rant in writing, I do have an op-ed piece about this out on the Digital Media Zone to check out.
Yep. Well, Richard, I'm sorry you had to go through that for the benefit of our listeners.
It was ridiculous. But I almost felt vindicated just going through there. I'm like, yes, I'm you know, in some ways I'm cheering that it was this bad, and in other ways I'm just shaking my head like, oh jeez.
Wow. All right, well, so that's not all that fun or happy, but we do have some happy news to end the news segments tonight, and that's news from Vizio. So you remember last fall when Vizio launched the P series and we were blown away that Vizio was launching a really nice 50-inch 4K TV for $1,000. $1,000! And by the time it got its firmware update, it was a really good TV for $1,000.
Yep.
Well, that was, you know, about a half a year ago now. And Vizio this week launched their new series. This is the M series. And it's not like this brand new start from scratch sort of line of TVs. These are basically just refinements to last year's P series. So these are 4K sets that are even better than last year's P series sets, and they cost even less money, way less money. So that 50-inch P series that was $1,000 last year, this year you can get a 50-inch M series for $800. And if 50 inch is too big, which it shouldn't be if you're looking at 4K, they've got two more options below that, going all the way down to a 43-inch model for only $600. Now, if you're buying a 43-inch 4K set, I hope you're using that as like a computer monitor or something where you're sitting really close, because you're going to need to see the difference in 4K. But these sets look awesome. Engadget got some hands-on time with them and said the video quality is great. They've got fast processors in them, and they've got AC Wi-Fi built into them, and of course 4K Netflix apps, and I think a 4K Amazon app, so that even though that Blu-ray standard isn't out yet, at least you can stream some 4K content on these bad boys. And man, I want one of these.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm greatly impressed by this. And Vizio has historically been putting out great televisions at amazing prices, just kind of really breaking that price barrier. I remember when this was something relegated to Costco, and now you can find Vizios in other areas online, and these are great TVs. I've bought a Vizio TV in the past.
It's funny to me that you use the phrase historically there, because, well, maybe ancient historically, Vizios weren't good TVs. They were crap when they first came out. They were the cheap TVs that sucked, but you could get them for really, really cheap. And then eventually they became good. And I mean, they're still trying to fight that stigma of the low cost brand, but now they actually are pretty good TVs.
Yeah, and I mean, when I say historically, I'm really only talking like the last 5 years or so. I mean,
right.
I think that they've put out a lot of good quality televisions, and certainly that's the time frame within which I've purchased them as gifts, actually.
Right. All right, so it for our news. What's going on in your non-4K entertainment center?
Yeah, sadly, no 4K and no Dolby Atmos yet either, but man, I'm still so tempted. All right, so I've had a lot going on. So first, let's look at the office. In my office, I talked about putting a TV in the office, and I had hooked up an Apple TV and stuff like that. So I had ordered basically a component cabinet to put the TV on and put the stuff that drives it in and hidden from sight. And that came in, so I got that hooked up, and I had some incentive there to get the rest of my things hooked up. So I added an old TiVo that I had in my bedroom, and that I had replaced with the TiVo Mini that I ended up buying from Desats, and I put the old TiVo that I had in my office here, which is a really good thing because it's old and you're starting to hear the hard drive. And so not click or anything, but you just hear noise in it now. You just hear whirring noise. So it's not something that I would want in the bedroom anymore. I had actually unplugged it because it was making too much noise. So here behind the door of the cabinet, it's fine. I'm not hearing it, and I'm liking having that here. I also hooked the TV audio out, which, you know, already has my components going into it, including a Google, what's that called again? The stick that they have?
Chromecast,
yeah. And I have the TV audio out now going into a Sonos Connect specifically. So now,
so remind us what a Sonos Connect is, because we know that Sonos is wireless speakers. What's a Sonos Connect?
Right. So the Sonos Connect allows you to do two things. It allows you to either take an input and feed it into your Sonos system, your whole home, and then figure out where you want to put it, or it allows you to take audio and feed it to any system that already has its own amplifier. So if I had a receiver, that I could then have some sort of Sonos target as the receiver itself and be able to send content from my Sonos system to that. So it's kind of a two-way thing. Now, I'm using it primarily as an input. I'm using it as a way of taking the TV sound and setting it as an input for my Sonos system, which I'm then playing back, and this is crazy, but on the Sonos speakers that are in my office already, because I have Sonos speakers in my office. And so what that does is, while I have Sonos kind of already set up to be playing, and I can have audio on in the background, that if you turn the television on or the entertainment center that's in my office on, it takes over the audio that's in my office automatically. And then the sound comes through the nice speakers from the Sonos instead of out of my crappy TV. So it's a pretty cool system, and I'm pretty happy about it.
It sounds cool.
Now, we talked about the games with gold a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned how I always forget to do that. So one of the things that I did was I went and I bought the games with gold, and I did it both on the 360 in my office and on the Xbox One that I have out in the family room. The 360 in my office is the cheapo 360 with a 4 gig hard drive. So I quickly learned that I could buy things for, you know, $0, but then I couldn't actually download them because I didn't have enough storage. So one of the things, I think, was a Gears of War episode or something like that, a special Gears of War game, and I was able to purchase it, but I couldn't download it to even like poke around and see what it was all about. So if I ever did want to play that, I'd probably have to get one of those 2 terabyte drives connected to my 360.
You might not need a 2 terabyte drive for that one game.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. And it's a good thing that I have a random smattering of external drives sitting around this place. So I'll just pick one up and use it for that.
There you go.
Now, while I was buying things, I was on a buying spree. This is free. This is free. This is free. And then I said, oh, look, that Ori in the Blind Forest is only $20. I'm going to buy that too.
Did you play it?
I haven't played it yet.
I haven't even bought it yet.
I can't believe I beat you to that.
I was the one super excited about it, but I just haven't had the time.
Looks cool. It took a long time to download. So by the time I started it, I was ready to go to bed and I didn't have time to see what it looked like when it was finished. So I still have to check it out, but it looks really cool. All right. So that's it for like setup and stuff like that. Let's talk about what I've been watching. I mentioned that I had started watching Penny Dreadful. We actually told some friends of ours about this show, and they binged on the whole thing in one weekend. Well, we ended up finishing season one, and it's only 8 episodes long, so it's not that hard, but really enjoyed that. Really looking forward to season two starting there. I've also, and I haven't mentioned this before, but when it came out, I talked about it. The series Fargo is a series on FX. And I've talked about it because it's something that I wanted to watch, but I can't get FX Now through my provider, Verizon Fios, one of the leading providers of television service in the United States, which doesn't pair with FX Now, even though over 40 other companies do. So I ultimately ended up buying them the first season at a discounted price on Apple, on the iTunes store. And I've been watching them on flights when I travel periodically. And I'm a couple episodes into that. And I really like it. Very good show. Very dark. Very, very dark. Just like Fargo, the movie was. And then I'm fully caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. until last night, I think. So I'm going to try and catch that tonight after I file my taxes. And finally, last night, no, two, three nights ago, I think. I think maybe it was Sunday night. I watched the HBO documentary Going Clear. I don't know if you've heard about this at all. This is the kind of tell-all documentary about what Scientology, well, what some people claim is going on in the Church of Scientology. And if it's true, holy crap.
I've heard that this is really interesting.
It is really interesting. It was very slow to start. And eventually, once it got going and they got into the thick of some of the stuff that was going on in there, it's just, I mean, it initially talks about their struggle fighting the tax exemption issue and stuff like that. And that was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then they get into just like human rights abuses issues that are just unbelievable.
Whoa.
So yeah. If you're at all interested in this, again, I have no idea how much of this is to be believed, but it was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Now, before I call it quits tonight, I wanted to mention that I had been asked a couple times over the past few weeks what podcasts I listen to. Other people wondering, you know, what are some good tech podcasts or what is it that interests me in terms of podcasts? And so I finally put together a list on my mostly neglected personal blog that identifies the things that I listen to. And it's about 30 or so.
Wait. There's 27 other podcasts to listen to? I thought there was only Entertainment 2.0, Home On, and The End User.
Well, I do list those because, believe it or not, I actually do post listen to all of our shows, but there are more. Yes.
Huh. Amazing.
So that's out there if anyone's interested in checking
breaking news. Cool.
How about you?
All right. So our quest to watch all of these Marvel Avengers related movies continues. It has to, because Avengers Age of Ultron is only a couple weeks away at this point, but we're getting through it. So I think last time we talked, I talked about Captain America, liked that. This week, we finally got to watch an Avengers movie. We're finally on the Avengers. Now, woohoo! This is actually a rewatching for us. If you've been following closely with this drama of ours, Jen and I watched the Avengers a couple of years ago, one night while like wrapping Christmas presents. It was on Netflix, and we were like, yeah, let's turn this on. We've heard good things. And then we walked away super confused because we didn't know the backstory of anything. But it seemed interesting, and that's kind of what sparked all this. Wow, that movie's so much better after you've seen some of the movies that come before it. That's probably not surprising.
See?
But yeah, it was good. It was absolutely my favorite movie out of all of these so far. And I'm wondering if the reason I liked it more was because of the more team-oriented focus of this movie, and if the reason that I like that more is because X-Men, which I love, is a team-oriented superhero series.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that actually factors into it, but it does allow you to do some things like take the Incredible Hulk, who you just can't make a good movie out of just him. He's not that interesting of a character, but make him a really interesting character for a few scenes. You know, the Mark Ruffalo or whatever his name is actor did a fantastic job playing Bruce Banner in those series or in those scenes. Really did an awesome job looking at the darker, harder side of his character. And then the scenes where the Hulk is fighting, like I was practically giggling like a schoolgirl watching the Hulk fight. Those are just
great
hilarious.
Yep.
So yeah, I really, really liked that the Avengers, the first Avengers. Next up, I believe, is Iron Man 3. Then we've got the sequels for Thor and Captain America. So three more movies before we get to Avengers Age of Ultron. We're going to try and do it. You know, we've only got like a half a month or so at this point, but we're going to try. So we'll see. Hopefully they'll all be good. Hopefully. And then I'm expecting really good things out of Avengers Age of Ultron with how good the first one was.
Yeah, I hope that movie doesn't disappoint.
I also, on the TV side, I'm in the seventh and final season of The West Wing now. This has been taking a really long time, but it is seven seasons of a TV show. I think I'm on episode 4 or something, so I'm betting I'll finish that up in the next couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, because I can tear through those pretty quickly while I'm doing other things. And so tonight I started thinking, well, what's going to be next for me after The West Wing? So I went over to my media center to see what shows I had piling up over there. And I noticed the current season of The Americans has been building up. And I really love that show. So I think that's going to be what's next for me after The West Wing. But that's probably a couple weeks away at this point.
Cool. Very cool.
All right. So one other last thing I wanted to say real quick before we get out of here. The raffle that we've been running the last couple of weeks as a fundraiser for our adoption is now over. It ended today, the day that we're recording this. So by the time you're listening to this, it's long gone. But I did want to just throw out an extra thank you to everyone who contributed. We had a lot of listeners contribute, and it means the world to us that you guys have stepped up and to help us out in this incredible journey to help us bring Gia home. So thank you so much. It's just been a mind-blowing experience to see the outpouring of support from all of you guys. So thanks to everybody. We did draw a winner tonight, and I'm sorry to say It wasn't one of our listeners, but it obviously was someone else who contributed, and you know, we're just happy to see someone get a cool prize out of it. So, all right, that's it. If you want to get a hold of us for next week or any future episode, you can do that in a bunch of ways. We're on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard is the easy way to follow him now is just follow at Richard Gunther, and you'll see all of his personalities all in one place. And the website, of course, is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheDMZ. We're also on Google Plus. We may or may not have a working voicemail number, so we'll skip over that. But we've got an email address that does work. That's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And of course, those other two podcasts, the only other two podcasts on the internet, The End User with Chris and Taylor, covering the latest tech news from the end user perspective, and Richard's other podcast, Home On. What's going on with Home On?
So you mentioned last week that we had an episode where we just caught up on news with the average guy, also known as Jim Cullison. And we had a great time talking about what's going on. This is the first time I actually had a chance to record with him, which is kind of unbelievable. In our next episode, I'm expecting to do a similar news rundown with one of our favorite industry analyst, Mike Wolf.
Oh, cool. That should be really interesting. Cool. All right. So if you want to listen to any of those podcasts, you can find them pretty much all the places where you can find podcasts. So iTunes, Zune. We're also on Stitcher Radio and TuneIn Radio. And if you like our shows, we'd appreciate it if you'd toss us a rating or a review. That helps new listeners find the show, and we really appreciate it. And then come back and listen live. We do the show typically Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. That wasn't the case this week. So your best bet is to just follow us on Twitter, because we always announce when the show is going to be. So follow us on Twitter. But Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern is the primary time for the show. And you can listen in and chat along with us while we record the show. That's going to do it for episode 324. I'm Josh Pollard, he's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next week for episode 325. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.